ACB Radio Mainstream is always looking for new and innovative programming. But in 2002, they found me. I'm Dave Williams here in Preston, where we're putting together ACB Radio Mainstream's newest program, The UK Connection. We start Thursdays at 1 GMT, that's Wednesday evenings in the States, with a mix of news, views and interviews. We're looking for your contributions as well, so drop us a line, dave@acbradio.org, that's dave@acbradio.org, or you can pick up the phone and call the UK on 44700 533 8876. That's 44700 533 8876. The UK Connection.
Don't you think he sounds tired?
Don't risk the disappointment of missing a great ACB radio program. Join our announcements list today. Receive email about upcoming programs on all our channels and new features. To join, send a blank email now to announce-subscribe@acbradio.org.
That's announce-subscribe@acbradio.org.
Or visit our website. Announcements about ACB radio delivered to you direct and free. Just another way to stay in touch with ACB radio.
ACB Radio.
The following is an ACB Radio Mainstream exclusive. Smart Hotel in Houston, Texas. ACB Radio Mainstream brings you coverage of the 41st Convention of the American Council of the Blind. Now, here's Jonathan Mosen.
It is Thursday, the 4th of July, 2002. Welcome back to live coverage from the Adams Mark Hotel's Grand Ballroom, where, as you can hear, it's emptied out a little because there are four concurrent workshops taking place at the moment. This is something that was started a couple of years ago. It's proven very popular, and it's continuing this year under Chris Gray's leadership. What we'll do is just run through the various options that are available. As soon as I bring them up on the old terminal here. All right, we've got four workshops this year. In the last couple of years, I guess a toe was put in the water and there were three workshops. This year there are four to choose from. The first session is Information Accessibility. And that's taking place in the Meadow Glen Room here at the Adams Mark Hotel. It's being facilitated by Roger D. Peterson, who's the chair of the Information Access Committee. They're going to be talking about such things as how things are going with Microsoft, and recently the Information Access Committee had what by all accounts was a very productive meeting with Microsoft about continuing the progress that their company has made to make its products accessible and to engage in dialogue with blind consumers to continue on that track. The second workshop is taking place here, and this is the one we'll be broadcasting live, although we do hope to have all of them available to you in the archives, but that, I must stress, that won't be until after the recordings are processed. The recordings here are made on mini-disc. There's a little bit of tidying up and probably post-production processing that goes on, so it will be a wee while before we can get you those archives on the web, but we do intend to. But what you'll be hearing live today is the Wayfinding Workshop. It's facilitated by Jim Eccles, and I guess we're going to be talking about ways of travelling with safety and dignity. I haven't heard anybody claim that any of the wayfinding technology substitutes for the use of mobility aids such as a white cane or a guide dog, but that they are very significant complements to those fundamental mobility aids. So I imagine we'll be talking about such technologies as the talking signs, which are here in abundance and were very useful in the exhibit hall, GPS, the global positioning system. There are a couple of adaptive technology vendors now marketing GPS products. GPS is available for the Braille Note family, and there's also a technology that will work with regular Windows CE based pocket PC systems that you can go and buy off the shelf and at least have them talking to act as a GPS receiver, kind of a self-voicing application. GPS is used in numerous other contexts, so we'll find out about those this morning, I'm sure, in the Wayfinding workshop, which we will be broadcasting live. Going on at the same time, we'll be talking about employment issues in that particular breakout session, finding and getting that dream job, something that's very important to all of us. That is facilitated by Mitch Pomerantz, and of course Mitch is involved in the Governmental Employees Division of ACB and is also on the Board of Directors. The fourth and final workshop, but by no means least, is the important issue of building healthy relationships. It's an interactive workshop that looks at maintaining and building quality relationships. It's one of the tough issues that I think we're about to convene, so we'll try and get you that feedback
again.
I'm
going to start this session in a couple of minutes as soon as the sound man says it's okay for me to talk. So if people are going to a session other than Wayfinding, this room is session two, the Wayfinding session. If you're going to the information accessibility session, session one,
that's over by where the exhibit area was. But you didn't say where they were. Meadow Glen Room is over by, and these are blind people. Some of them may not know. Meadow Glen Room is over by where the exhibit area is. Wayfinding is right here. Eureka, you found it if that's where you wanted to go. I'm told, but I haven't been there, that Front Pavilion is over sort of near the exhibit area. And as I recall, Briar Park 2 and 3 is just sort of across the hall from this room. Is that right, Cindy?
That is correct.
Okay. The coordinator says that I've got my wayfinding all figured out here. So I guess it's okay that I'm in the front of the room, I guess. All right. So
this is the sound table. You may begin at your discretion.
Thanks, Mike. Welcome to the breakout session two here in the 10:30 time slot on Thursday. This session is on wayfinding. If you want to be at any of the other three sessions, feel free to get up and leave because you're not here for me. Each of us presenters is here for you, and you need to be in the room that has the information that you're personally interested in. So don't feel bad about getting up and going to a different presentation. We just went over where the other three presentations were. If people are wandering back in and they don't know, perhaps if you hear someone lost, maybe you could pass on to them individually the information I just gave you. If this were a smaller room and a smaller group, I guess maybe we'd go around the room and kind of find out who's here. But and I'd love to do that, but I think in this room that's a little unworkable. So I'm going to skip that step, but I do feel very bad about it because there may be someone in the room three chairs over or two rows up that you've been looking for all week, and you'd get to find out that you're almost right next to them. But that just isn't very workable in this large room.
Excuse me, why don't you suggest that everyone come towards the center of the room because I couldn't tell where you were.
Yeah, I'm up in front here for those of you. I'm off mic for a second so people in the room can tell where I am since I'm not in the speaker that's next to them. I'm up here in front, And people who are in the room might want to move toward the front and toward the center so that you can hear better. When we get to the point where we're dealing with questions, since this session is being put out on the internet, or will be, they just want to raise the pressure, so they just told me, well, it's live now. That's really multitasking. I wasn't sure if they were going to do all four sessions at once and then you just figure it out. So if you have a question to ask when we get to questions, please go to one of the aisle mics, and they're located in the same places that they are during the general sessions, except I'm told that the right rear mic, as you're facing, is not available, but all the other mics are where they usually are. So get to an aisle and look for a mic when we get to questions, or if you have questions. Now, any other questions? Okay. If you've been looking for them, Blind Signs is here, and you may be able to touch base with them if you haven't seen them in the booth and checked out their tactile walking services that kind of let you know what kind of area you're approaching, a bus stop, an intersection, or what have you. All right. My name is James Eccleston. I'm the special envoy for ACB for wayfinding. I didn't know I had that title until I read it in the program, so I'm as surprised by it as you are. First, I'm going to say a little bit about how I got this job and how it all started, because someone back there must be thinking, how does this guy get up in front of the room and tell us about this stuff? I know when I'm sitting back there, I wonder, how do these people get these assignments? Because I think one very important thing about ACB is the message that I don't think goes out often enough is, if you want to do work, it's just like when the car shows up downstairs and it's full of groceries. If you want to, everybody in the family would be perfectly happy if you went down and grabbed a bag and headed back upstairs. So if there are people who want to do work in the organization and a topic comes up that you're interested in, throw your hand up in the air, answer an email, get on the phone and make a call. You can get involved in projects. If you want to move from the back of the room to the front of the room, this is not an exclusive organization. We need worker bees, and anybody who wants to be busy, busy, busy can be. All this started last Thanksgiving when Charlie Crawford kind of sent out I guess if we were in another setting, you'd call it an arrow prayer. You know, he says, well, there's a wayfinding seminar coming up, and it's coming up in the Pacific Northwest, and would anybody like to go there and be there and give the ACB position? And I really didn't know what that was all about, but, you know, if work needs to be done and it's in my neighborhood, I'm willing to lend a hand. If they find somebody better at it, good, but I'm willing to help if they can use me. So I sent Charlie a reply email and said, yes, I'd love to do it. I figured they'd pick someone high-powered, you know, Steve Spiker, one of the officers, or one of the high-powered people in APS, Accessible Pedestrian Systems, you know, Debbie Grubb, Pat Beatty. But I put my name in just in case that they would, just in case they could use me, figuring that, well, that'd be the last I'd hear of that. A week or so later, Charlie gets back to me and says, well, how would you like to go? Because you're in the area. And I said, well, now that you're really going to pick me, maybe you should ask my affiliate president if it's okay, if it's me. Maybe he has someone else in my own state that, you know, he feels would be better for this job. So he asked my home president, and that still didn't get me off the hook, because he said it was a good idea to keep me out of trouble also. So I had the job. Then my next problem was, what's wayfinding? And more important, it's irrelevant what yours truly, Jim Eccles' wayfinding position is. What's ACB's wayfinding position? Because I'm not going to this seminar to stand up on my hind legs and say, hi, I'm Jim Eccles, and this is what I think. I'm giving ACB's position. So I asked Charlie to organize a sort of a session, and he and Pat Beattie graciously agreed to have a conference call with me and kind of talk me through these things. I know something about the travel subject. I've published an article back when Nolan Crabb was the Braille Forum editor on using audible pedestrian signals, and I'm an active independent long cane traveler, so I'm interested in the subject, but that's not the same thing as standing up and giving ACB's position. So they had a conference call with me, brought me up to speed. People who were going to the seminars were supposed to submit a paper, you know, like you would at an academic forum, and it was supposed to go up on the website for the conference, and so I did that, and I sent it to Charlie, and I sent it to Pat, and I sent it to Chris, and just in case any of them said, wonderful, great, good job, or they might say, don't let that ever see the light of day again, or whatever. And I didn't hear much back, so I figured either it bored them to tears, or I went on. All right. So then I got to go to the conferences. So I just want to make the point that if you want to do a job in this organization, jump in. And I don't think we make that pitch often enough. What is? Oh, I guess I have to do one more thing. I have a stack of handouts up here. It's both the print and braille of the paper that I submitted. And since it's a paper designed for a sort of academic audience, because most of the presenters there were Dr. This and Dr. That, so I wrote it in that linguistic style. So I have a box of handouts up here, and I guess probably since we don't really just have a table up here that's really accessible, I can give those out to people. Come up at the end of the session, I guess. And Donna says that's probably the best way to handle that. And I also have a short resource list, so you can get that. What is wayfinding? Wayfinding is the tools, procedures, and skills used in familiarizing yourself as a blind traveler with an unfamiliar area. Primarily urban areas, because those are segmented into streets and roadways, but not necessarily exclusively urban. It could be a large open space where there's an object you could home in on and go to, but predominantly urban areas. The Institute for Innovations in Blind Navigation, IIBN, which was organized in the late 90s and then got a grant from NEC America, one of the computer and electronics firms, they got a grant to do 4 seminars about wayfinding around the country. 2 have already been held. One was in March in the Pacific Northwest, quote-unquote in Seattle, although when presenters landed in Seattle, they were then told that they had another hour and a half to go before they got there. But and then the second one was in April, mid-April, in Kalamazoo, Michigan. There will be one in mid-November, Thursday, November 14th, in Orlando, Florida. And there are possibly 1 or 2 more planned after that. One in Pennsylvania, and then there's one that has been called the Southwest, which started out nominally or tentatively being scheduled for, say, Arizona and New Mexico, but has wound up either now in San Francisco or the Napa Valley. So it's moving north and west. I don't, you know, it could be in my backyard by the time they finally nail it down. So there will be others around the country, and you should keep your ears and eyes open for information about those upcoming seminars. But there is one in mid-November. At the 2 seminars that have already taken place, both of which I attended, there were three groups of presenters. There were people who have products and services. And since this is a consumer organization and we don't have a lot of time, that's really what I'm going to focus on. There were also professional groups such as the people from the Veterans Administration, the VA centers, who actually evaluate and instruct in the use of this technology. AFB also was there talking about some of their evaluations of technology, particularly GPS systems. And there was also a presenter on artificial vision and where that is. I'm not really going to say a lot about artificial vision because I'm going to try and concentrate on consumer products that you can actually things that you can actually hold in your hand and use right now today. But I will tell you that one of the people who was there is Mike May, Vice President of Pulse Data Humanware, and Mike has undergone an operation to restore some of his vision. And the British Broadcasting Corporation recorded a documentary which chronicles Mike's going through that process, which will be aired in the UK in September. Mike just happened to have a video on him of the documentary and showed it last April in the Michigan seminar. So if you're talking to Humanware and Pulse Data Humanware in general, or Mike in particular, you might ask about how it might be possible to see that documentary, because I think watching Mike go through this process from start to not necessarily finish, because it's something he's still working on, I think that's a lot more interesting than anything I might say about it third or fourth hand from what I've heard at a seminar. So I think Mike would be a good person to talk to about that process, because he is a real live consumer of artificial vision surgery and implants. Well, he's here. In fact, I ran into him yesterday morning. He's has been in the exhibit area through yesterday. I'm not sure if he's still at the hotel here, but you could probably best contact Mike through Humanware. And Humanware is on my because Mike's also involved in selling the BrailleNote GPS. In fact, he's one of the principal. His smaller company before it got merged in with Humanware is involved in the production of the BrailleNote GPS, and so you could contact him through Humanware and perhaps talk with him about that process. And I think talking with a real live consumer is more beneficial than anything I might say. Mike May, M-A-Y, Vice President or Humanware. Can you get to a mic? All right, either that or I can repeat your question, I guess. Okay. Marlena, do you have a comment about any of that so far? If it's about the artificial vision, yeah, that would probably be good. Since she's also a representative for Humanware and involved in the BrailleNote GPS and other products, and particularly training for that, Marlena would probably be a good person to ask questions about that. Thank you, Marjo. At the wayfinding seminars, the two product and service providers that we heard from were, as I've already alluded to, Mike May of Humanware with his product, the BrailleNote GPS. Now, BrailleNote GPS combines two things that you probably already know something about. A GPS receiver, it's about a cell phone-sized device, and a lot, most people, you know, you get one for your car and you put it on your dashboard. A lot of companies, some of the higher-end cars have them built in, and if you rent a car from some of the car rental companies, Avis or Hertz, you may have actually even been in a vehicle that had one. Well, that's what Mike sells, only it is hooked up to a box, in this case the Braille Note GPS, that has both speech and a Braille display. So you can read tactually or hear audibly the location information provided by your GPS receiver. So Mike talked about this in the seminar, at one of the seminars, because it was kind of out in the woods, out in the middle of nowhere. Mike actually wandered around with his cane outside the presentation room and said, suppose I want to get back to my room. So he just sort of struck out across, because this was in one of those conference, suburban, rural conference centers where you're sort of off in bungalows, and then there's kind of a bigger cabin that's the meeting area, and then at night you go back to your smaller cabin that's out in the middle of nowhere. Mike just struck off across out in the middle of nowhere, and we all dutifully trudged along behind him, and he walked straight to his cabin. I'd been spending all week fearing I'd miss breakfast or some other meal because I might not find a sighted guide to get there, but Mike just struck out across the tundra and arrived. So he gave a very good demonstration of his product and its usability. So Mike talked about the Braille Note GPS, which is essentially a Braille and speech system that will give you information based on global positioning satellite technology and information about where you are and about points of interest in your vicinity. As you're going, as we were going down the highway on the way to the airport after the second presentation, Mike had his GPS system out, and he was finding restaurants in the area and, you know, recreation parks and other things as we were whizzing down the highway. He knew more than the driver did. So that was pretty amazing for the blind guy in the car to be the most knowledgeable person about the environment that we were passing through. I found that pretty impressive. I wanted one right away, but my wife said I could not sell the grandkids to get one. So, I don't know. I thought it was a good idea, at least for a couple of days after the seminar. Then I finally calmed down, but for a couple of days. So that's kind of how the Braille Note GPS works and what it does. Now, there are some limitations. If it's going to tell you where you are, say, within a few meters, it might be a good technology for getting you, say, to the mall, but it's probably not a good technology for pinpointing specific entrances at the mall. Or let's say you go to a Galleria or one of those kind of shopping centers where there's lots of little Warrens and shops, you know, a leather craft store and a little boutique and other things like that. So it's not good for picking out those kinds of individual places. Something like talking signs or some other kind of technology would work best for that. So GPS doesn't do everything, and Mike's very frank and honest in pointing that out. But it sure is a lot. If you dropped me in Cleveland or somewhere I've never been before, I sure would want to have one on me to figure out where I was. I would defer now we've arrived. I would defer for latest up-to-date price information to Marlena if she's here and wants to speak to that.
Well, I bought one yesterday.
When you bought one yesterday, what was it? Yeah, you could get the there's a voice. I knew there was note, but I could. There's a voice note that it is cheaper because the Braille display is a pretty expensive component.
Voice note with a QWERTY keyboard was $22.95.
Voice note with a QWERTY keyboard. That means a regular typewriter keyboard. You know, ASDF, QWER. Was what's that price again?
$22.95. And the GPS system that links into that was $650.
And the GPS, that is the little cell phone size receiver that links into whichever note you buy, voice note, Braille note, is $650. And that includes the software and everything that you need to use to go with it. And then the other prices go up from there The GPS doesn't get more expensive, but depending upon which Braille note you bought, there's a smaller display versus larger display, the price would go up accordingly. But that's so you're going to spend several thousand dollars for this technology currently. Now, for those of you who are low vision people, this sort of ties into the AFB presentation. And some of you may have read, I think it was the May issue of Access World, the technology magazine published bimonthly by AFB, American Foundation for the Blind. They did a review of all of the off-the-shelf GPS technologies that you can buy, you know, for hikers and orienteers and other people who do orienteering. You can buy a GPS system for a few hundred dollars because, of course, they don't need expensive non-standard Braille displays. They just need a little display screen, LCD screen. So did any of them work for a blind or low-vision audience? And what AFB found is really none of them worked for someone who was totally blind, but the co-pilot worked for people who are low vision. So I'd commend the May issue of Access World to you, and you could find out more about that if you're a low vision person and you'd like to get into this technology and spend a few hundred dollars rather than a few thousand dollars. The next important presenter who presented a product or service, actually probably a combination of both, was Dan Kish, K-I-S-H, of World Access for the Blind. Now, let me go over this slowly and carefully so I don't engender confusion. World Access for the Blind is a small a private company that Dan is the executive director of, and it has nothing to do with Access World, which is a publication of the American Foundation for the Blind on technology issues, which may on occasion include travel-related assistive technology. So it's two entirely separate kettles of fish. So World Access for the Blind, run by Dan Kish, is a company that's very much a personal company. Dan has, since his teenage years, developed a personal system of making clicking sounds. I can't do his, but you all can imagine how that would work. Only his are really much more refined than that. And by using the echolocation that generates that, he is able to move through obstacle-infested environments. He has a video that he showed at both seminars in which he is riding a bicycle through almost sort of like a slalom course, as you know, poles and other things, and he avoids all of them. He doesn't get any bumps on his forehead. I might get a bump on my forehead just walking through with a cane. And Mr. Kish is riding a bicycle. That's pretty impressive. So Dan does essentially two things. He and his firm offer to teach people, and if you'd have to talk to him about price and things, it probably depends on how far you want him to go. It might be more expensive to go to Timbuktu than Spokane, but he is willing to come to a person's area and show you this skill, because he says it's not an intuitive sort of a savant kind of thing that you have to be born with. He says it is a teachable skill, and he says it's a lot easier to teach children than adults because they're more malleable. I don't know, whenever I wanted my kids to eat their salad, I never thought they were very malleable, but he says the kids are more malleable, and he can show them in a few hours how to use this skill that he has and move through unfamiliar environments, detect and identify things in environments, you know, that's a tree or that's a building, and other kinds of really fine object discriminations. And then they had an interview on the video with some of the college-age people. They showed some younger kids, too, but some of the college-age people. And the one comment that I thought was very interesting was that one college-age gentleman had been to two different college campuses. And he said, when I went to Campus A, my rehab agency got me a mobility instructor, and we spent the whole day going over the campus. And I sort of knew some of it. When I transferred to my current campus, I heard about Dan. I had him come, and within an hour or two, I pretty much had the campus all pretty much figured out. I knew where things were. I knew how to find things. He said it took far less time, and I had a far better picture. Well, that sounded pretty good to me. At that time, I only had one grandkid, so I couldn't put another one up for one for GPS and another for Dan's private service. Since then, I have a second grandchild. I guess if my wife said it was okay, now I could get both of them. But I don't have personal experience not having the money to hire Dan, but from what the videos showed and the interviews said, the interviewees said, it sounds like his technology and his attendance system is worth a look-see. Now, Dan also, in addition to teaching that skill, has used some of the echolocation systems that are sold. Some of you may remember things like the Sonic Guide and the K device that send out, that have been available for maybe 30 or 40 years, that send out an ultrasound signal and then that comes back, and then using a transducer it lowers the signal to a human hearing range, and then by use of a sonar you can, and with considerable training, you can learn to move through environments and detect obstacles and find a post that's way on the far side of a parking lot and home in on it and walk straight across. Well, Dan's company offers some of those technologies, some that do the echolocation type things that we're traditionally used to, and some that are an electronic equivalent of the click sounds that Dan makes for people like me who are click sound challenged. I don't make very good clicks. I'm sorry. I don't like admitting that in front of all of you, but that's the truth. And he has, and by using these devices, he can enhance your ability to operate in a randomly placed object, densely packed object environment. Yes.
This is Dick Slyther.
Yes. He uses both. Dick's question is, does Dan do his own clicking? Yes, and may I say, he's really good at it. But he does have this technology, and what he says about it when people ask him the question, well, which is better, your clicks or these the man-made clicks or the artificially produced clicks, he says they both provide different information and they're both useful, and even he uses it's a system called SoundFlash, a device called SoundFlash that's available through his company that actually produces an electronic sound burst that is the functional equivalent of the clicks that he does. Now, Dick, what's your question? I think it's a small device that you carry. Hold that idea of wearing and versus carrying in your mind, because that's something we're going to come back to before we get out of here. Dick has asked a prescient question, but well, I'll keep talking.
Dick, if you're going to talk, please get to the microphone.
Yeah, well, it's. Okay. So that was those were the two product related those were the two product related sets of information that were provided at the conference. Now, in addition to that, as I've already mentioned, okay, those were the two product and service related presenters at the conference. There were also, as I said, some professionals there, mobility people and people who evaluate and instruct in product usage, like people from the VA and AFB. But those were the sessions. So those were the two seminars. The last two things I want to do before I throw it open for your questions is I want to give you the short summary, because what my academic audience paper says in 11 pages could probably really be said in about half a page. Although I really wish you would take all this stuff out of here, because you know many hands make light work. So if each of you takes one of these things, even if you just wrap your fish in it, once you get out of here, it's between you and your God what you do with it. I'm not going to know what you do with my handout, but it's a lot easier for each of you to lug one set of handouts than for me to take this box back home. So am I pleading? Yes, I am. Take a handout. What you do with it is not my business. The handouts are... I was instructed that there's not really a good place to put them out, so I'm gonna distribute them at the end. But I have them up here and they're with me. I apologize for that. It's not the way I would have done it, but there are higher powers, so I apologize. Okay, I want to talk about what I was your special envoy, I guess, at the seminars. I want to talk very quickly about what I said, and then I want to talk about the IIBN, the Institute for Innovation in Blind Navigation. I always get that name wrong, so if I say it three different ways, yeah, I have this problem, and that's why I always say IIBN, but then everybody says, huh. So, I'll take questions, and we can have a free-ranging discussion. Basically, what I said in my paper conveying the ACB position on wayfinding as distilled through my discussions with Executive Director Charlie Crawford and Pat Beattie, formerly of the Environmental Access Committee and very active in APS issues, accessible pedestrian system issues, formerly audible pedestrian, accessible pedestrian signal issues, formerly audible pedestrian signal issues. It's bad enough that we have an alphabet soup, but then they keep changing what the letters mean. So, basically, I said that the ACB supports wayfinding. I mean, we support the concept and the idea of blind people knowing where they are in unfamiliar environments. That's probably a no-brainer. Second, the development of wayfinding technology and instructional services up till now has been pretty much the exclusive province of individual private developers and in some cases research centers, and it hasn't been cross-fertilized by lots of input from everyday blind people like you and like me. That's the history to date of wayfinding technology. And what I said ACB called for, and I hope you won't rescind this, is we call for a dialogue, a conduit, means of coming together of the developers of wayfinding products and services, the professionals who evaluate the technology and give instruction in the technology, and blind consumers of the technology, who would be able to give important input such as, this is a great device, but it's too hard to use, or I don't need this information, but this other thing that you're telling me is useful. So that's basically what I said. Now, I don't care if you read the 11 pages it took me to say that, but at the end of this thing, please feel free to take one or more with you. You know, if you have a friend who's really gabby, give him one of these and that'll take care of him for the whole evening. You know, and that'll just... So it could be useful even if you don't care about it.
Jim?
Yes?
This is Michael Byington.
Mr. Byington.
I guess my question as to whether your paper, which obviously I haven't read yet, deals with something that ACB has gone on record with as a position, is we have a number of resolutions on file over the years that relate to what is and is not the appropriate use for detectable warnings, the difference between detectable warnings and wayfinding. And I'm curious, number one, if that's an issue that was dealt with at the conferences to which you were our envoy, and secondly, if it's an issue that you personally in your presentation and approach to that conference addressed, or was that outside of the concept of wayfinding that we were working with here?
In my paper, thank you, Michael. In my paper, I took the position that up through the 80s, I sort of have a brief historical romp through wayfinding that's really exciting. I mentioned detectable warnings and braille and large print and color contrast and signage and other issues, and I indicate that and accessible pedestrian signals, and I indicate that most of those are travel issues. So in the big picture mode, all of these are travel issues: wayfinding, detectable warnings, accessible pedestrian signals, signage. Those are all travel issues. Most of the others I kind of lumped under the category of danger avoidance, or, you know, letting you know where not to be. You don't want to be past the edge of the platform. You don't want to be in the intersection when the light's against you, that sort of thing. And so wayfinding is a separate subject in that it's not dealing with providing you with danger warnings. It's dealing with the broader orientation issue of where am I? Kind of like when you walk into a large mall and you find the map and the map says you are here. So I need to know where I am, and I need to know where the place I want to get to is, and I need to know what the most direct accessible route between those two points.
Well,
is. So what I said was wayfinding is those are all travel issues, and those are all issues we've been very concerned with. But that wayfinding was an issue that we haven't really had a good dialogue with. Products sort of come along and are dropped in front of us or set in front of us at conventions such as this, but we aren't really allowed to get behind the counter and really talk with the developers, let them know what we want, modify what they have, and move the discussion forward in a way that benefits people on both sides of the counter. So that's what I said about...
Mr. Chair?
Yes?
This is Ken Stewart. I want to join my colleague, Michael Byington, pursuing the subject a bit more. And I, like he, have not yet had the pleasure of reading your document, but I assure you I'll take a copy afterwards.
At least one.
Feel that's right.
Free to take multiple copies.
Yes.
This is one situation where you're encouraged to be a pig.
My people will get back to your people on that.
Great. We'll do lunch. Your question, Mr. Stewart.
Yes. My suggestion is that it might be a useful way to divide the universe of devices, products, and technologies for wayfinding into those that are carried by the traveler and those that are embedded in the environment.
A questioner before you, Mr. Seifert, are quite prescient. If I get there, I'm gonna talk about that.
Thank you,
Jim. This is Michael Byington again.
Michael, you have one more chance to bring clarity to where I am in relation to answering your question.
Okay.
Use it wisely. Go.
No, you went an interesting place there, and I understand the distinction as you're drawing it, and I commend you,
Michael,
for
I need a question, and I need
doing
it now.
So in the paper. Actually, I'm going to make a point. I don't think it's a question, Jim, but I think it's relevant. You can comment on it if you want. The issue that has been a concern where there is an overlap between wayfinding and warning devices that we need to be aware of as an organization and, in fact, make sure that the two issues remain separate and defined very separately, as you suggest, is there has been a tendency of some agencies, some entities wanting to make accommodations for people to who are blind to, for example, and there are other examples, but this is one of the best.
Hurry, Michael, I'm getting lost.
Take a strip of detectable warnings and create a path for people to walk on from the parking lot into a building or something along those lines. And
I think that's a wayfinding issue.
It's a wayfinding issue, but it becomes a problem when the same types of environmental cues are used for wayfinding and for identification of warnings. And I think it's very important in any position that ACB takes on the subject of wayfinding that we make a point to make certain that that is separate. Detectable warnings are for hazards. Cuckoos and birdies, however much we may think they're not the best audible traffic signal, they're out there, they're used for warnings. We don't want a cuckoo in front of somebody's doorway to let you know that's the clock store.
That's second, right. I think Michael's point is very well taken, and it's one that we do need to stress. We need to see to it that wayfinding and hazard avoidance are two separate tracks, and we can't use the same signal to do both things. I think that's very true. I agree with that. Okay. We have a couple of yays and a nay. I want to get back to this, but let me get through my last area, and then we'll get to questions. So that was kind of the position that I took about the wayfinding. The last thing I want to talk about, and then we can have a free flowing discussion or a free for all or however that works out. The IIBN, the Institute for Innovations in Blind Navigation, began in the late 90s by Dr. Doug Baldwin of Saginaw, Michigan, who is an orientation and mobility specialist that teaches school-age children in that area. And he felt that the world is kind of moving on in terms of what's available. His big picture, outside the box, forward-looking vision is that someday we're going to have what he calls smart environments. That is, environments that have microprocessors or whatever they'll use by then embedded in them that provide information. And he feels that consumers will, at some point in the future, have wearable computer products and micro product devices. So his vision is that eventually a blind traveler will walk up to an intersection and his wearable computer system will communicate with the intersections, what he calls smart space. He calls these smart spaces as opposed to dumb spaces where you can't find out anything. I've encountered one or two of those here at the convention. I'm somewhere and I'm not sure where that is and it's not telling me. So the smart space will interface with the person with the wearable computer equipment or microprocessor or what have you, and that area, whether it's an intersection or a corridor or a stairway or wherever you might be, will give you what you need to know in the way you need to know it, because it will already know. That's kind of his vision. So what Dr. Baldwin says is that's what's going to happen someday. Our problem is we need to have some dialoguing among the product developers, service providers, instructors, and consumers as to how we ought to get there and what works best on the way. And that's his vision for the future. And as a medium for getting us from here to there, he founded IIBN. And one of the first things IIBN has done is to organize seminars around the country that bring people together to talk about these issues. So I think one of the really important ideas that I need to convey here is I think the reality of wayfinding is it is not a static entity. It'll go out and buy a product or learn a skill or access a service, and then by 3 weeks from Tuesday you'll be up to speed on wayfinding. Wayfinding is going to be a constantly changing, evolving situation, and it will require dialoguing among everybody involved to make it work. So that's the vision of IIBN, and I think what it creates for us as consumers is a forum, or multiple fora, that's your Latin for the day, in which people can get together and exchange ideas and come up with better products and more usable services than the developers would come up with on their own in isolation. So that's why I think far more important than anything I can say to you today or anything that the resolution wizards can come up with by 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, if they still had time to do that, or more important than any yay or nay standing vote we could take now, more important than any of that is for people who are active, independent travelers to get themselves involved, ramped up, networked in, connected through, however you want to look at it, to the discussions on wayfinding and participate, because I think wayfinding in 2 years or maybe even 6 months is going to begin to look different than it does right now. So I don't think wayfinding is a destination. I think it's a process. It's not the destination. It's the trip. And I think that's where we are with wayfinding. So I think that's the one important idea that I would want to get across. We're in a state of flux, and people need to get involved so that flux goes in a direction you like, rather than a direction you're really, really going to hate. One last thing I'll say about this, and then I'm going to throw it open. One of the links on the Wayfinding website is a sort of a paper or an ongoing discussion that Dr. Baldwin has created, where he looks at the future and goes through all this and kind of looks at where we've been, where we are now, and where we're going. I sort of think of Dr. Baldwin as kind of the Alvin Toffler of wayfinding. You know, he kind of looks at it the way you would, if, you know, if you were reading Future Shock or The Third Wave or whatever. He's kind of in that sort of mold. We better jump on the future before it goes into warp drive and leaves us not even on the planet. So, okay. I am ready to do two things. What I'm going to take a second to do here is to put out the handouts up here. I apologize for the fact that the general session didn't break with enough advance time for me to get up here and do that. But I'm going to put the handouts up here. And then, Pat, good to see you. And what I have here is print. And I have large print in Braille of in 11 pages in Braille, 7 pages large print is my paper, and it could wrap a lot of fish. And then I didn't bring any discs, but in my pocket I have a text file of the resource list and a Word perfect 5.1 with the right file extension so that Word knows what to do with it, version of the paper in my pocket. So I could email it to people if they want. Okay, so the Braille version, I sort of said this before, but the Braille version of the paper is 11 pages, the print, large print version is 7. The Braille version of the resource list is 1 page plus, and I think the print version, well, it's a page. So. Okay, so now, I'm gonna set these up along here, and then people can grab. Okay. I'm gonna start now that everybody's here. What I'm handing out right now. But I'm sorry for the internet, folks. Just reach through your computer and grab one. What I'm gonna hand out right now are the Braille papers. My position paper on wayfinding on behalf of ACB. So I'll start with those.
Mr. Chair.
Take whatever you could have several. Okay, question. I'm multitasking, but if I get stuck, I apologize. What's the question?
Mr. Chair, there's a preface before this question. This is Rob Cook. Mr. Crawford, in March and in April, as by the convention committee,
I'm
programs
sorry,
and the programs
hold it,
committee.
Please hold it. Just start over again because I got distracted. I'm sorry.
Patience. My name is Rob Cook. Since March, I've been talking to Mr. Crawford and the convention's program committee. Mr. Kevin Stockton of Blind Signs was provided the opportunity to speak at this and present the new things that he has brought here, which is Blind Signs, because it's pertinent to ACB, because it's a low-tech wayfinding system that is from a blind individual, as you noted, is not often. He is very open for communication, is why he came to ACB to speak. At any time, and he has come to this meeting to speak because he was offered the opportunity by Mr. Crawford and the program chair. So my question is, could we have a short presentation of Blind Signs, being that it is not high-tech, not electronic, is brought to the blind community with open...
Ron, the short answer to your question is yes, and as soon as we're done handing out the handouts... And if there are no, because we still have about a half hour to go, or 20 minutes to go, if there are no other questions, then, ladies and gentlemen, everybody needs to kind of be silent for about 10 seconds here, because you probably won't want to need to know this. Blind Signs is here. They were one of the exhibitors in the exhibit area through yesterday at 1, and. Their product person is here to make a short presentation. So as soon as I'm done up here, I'm going to surrender the dais to him, and he can tell you about a Blind Sign. So that will happen just as soon as I get done doing this. But I thank you very much, Ron, for your persistence in clarifying that and making sure that was going to happen. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
But
Rob
now
Brooks.
I'm giving out... Let me make sure I'm where I think I am. Now I'm giving out Braille of the single page, single sheet resource list. Here you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now I need Now that we've gotten here, let me say one more thing before I start handing out the next item. I want to apologize. Professionally, I used to have a job where I provided Braille to people. And I did this list, the resource list, as I was going out the door. And, everything is there that I wanted to put in, but the addresses and URLs, that is, the website addresses and the email addresses, didn't get done in computer Braille. So if any of you have trouble figuring those out, come up and talk to me. My dad always said, no matter what you do, you can't make everyone unhappy. There may be Braille readers here who are perfectly happy that I didn't put it in computer Braille, but I do apologize for that oversight on my part, and I should have been more careful. Now I'm giving out the large print resource list.
Yeah.
Just a sec.
Yeah. Excuse me, do you have that available electronically also?
Well, I have one copy of the disc here that it was on. I can take people's email addresses and send it to you later if you wish. If you had something to suck in a floppy.
Why don't you give out your email, be easier?
Glenn, when I'm done handing out the handouts, I will do that. Thank you, Glenn, for that good idea.
Seems like you could.
Okay. Here, this is the resource list. Now, this is the last handout item. Sorry, Internet people. This is the last handout item. I'm giving out the ink print versions of my ACB position paper. Okay, there you go.
Hey, Ken.
Okay, now, I apologize for people who are really wroth with me for how this was done, but I work with what the higher powers and the planners tell me to do, and I've done, you know, the best I could, and if it wasn't very good, tell me what time to show up for the crucifixion. Okay. Now, all of the handouts in all versions have now left the podium area. So if you don't have one, move up here to the front and get one. All right. Okay. Wait a minute. There are people up here who are willing to distribute them. So they're going to.
The biggest mess in the world here. Why don't you get somebody signed and organized?
Well, I think we can get through it, but I think it'll just take some time. Okay. Now, question. Yes. The large print is only 7.
Well, are you got the 7?
I've already given them all out.
Yeah, it's quite the serious verbosity. Is Kevin stepping to the podium?
Okay, I'm sorry. Was there a question out there?
Yes, is Mr. Stockton stepping to the podium?
I didn't hear that. Did whoever needed to hear? Is that a question for an individual requesting an individual person?
We want the speaker.
Okay. Now, is the talking science a presenter here in the room?
Could I ask?
I'm sorry. I apologize. Is the blind science presenter here in the room? Yes. Yeah.
May we we just have an introduction and get on with it? Sir, my name is Rob Cook. I know. Good.
If the blind science presenter would come up here to the podium, I'm going to put him on. Now, the very last thing that I have been asked to do. Thank you for that moment of prayer, Mr. Cook. The very last thing that I've been asked to do is provide you with my email address. It is on the. My email address is on the resource list, but for those of you who would have preferred it in computer braille as I would have, that's okay. Are there any copies that of any of the handouts that have not been distributed? Does everybody have?
I don't have one.
Okay. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, I apologize if there were people who didn't get handouts. I took the numbers from what we had in terms of sign-ups for this presentation from Mr. Olson, and that's what I produced. And I apologize if people did not, they wanted them and they didn't get them. I do apologize. If people want to get in touch with me either privately when this is done, or you want to email me later, I'd be perfectly willing, or call me, or however, I'd be perfectly willing to help you get the information. Okay. I'm gonna give my email address, and then I'm going to turn this over for the balance of the time to the blind science presenter. My name is Jim Eccles, ECCLES. My phone number, for those of you who would prefer to communicate that way, is Vancouver, Washington area phone number is 360-699-4927. That's 360-699-4927. My number, snail mail address, that is physical street address, and email address is on the resource list handle. I guess that I distributed them from up here, and as I understand it, there are not any left. Let me.
Maybe move forward.
I'm not sure that date is set, but if you want to. My email address is jeccles@attbi.com. That's jeccles@attbi. That's ATT Broadband Internet. attbi.com. So that's my name, and that's my phone number, my snail mail address, and my email address. And I do have the two files on disk, and I have the disk with me. So if anybody has here in the hotel their own capability to take this off a disk and put it in their own system, I could satisfy those people on an individual basis. I did not bring extra disk copies of the resource list in the paper. All right, I am now going to turn over the dais to the Vine Signs presenter, and we'll find out more about a product that perhaps some of you saw in the exhibit hall through yesterday, and perhaps some of you this is totally new. So let's all find out.
My name's Rob Cook, and I'm going to give a little introduction to Kevin Stockton, who I met in Oregon. I'm on the Oregon Disabilities Commission as a commissioner, and I've worked in independent living, and I'm a rehab professional. I've been blind for 23 years. When I first met and heard about Kevin's product, and I saw it, my reaction, like so many other blind people in the room, some 35 people, was with my mouth open. I went, dang, is that simple? Because it's no tech. It's the same thing as you run over on the highways. And I wanted to bring Kevin here to have an opportunity to speak at the national level, and I invited him to come through Charlie and many other people, because not only is he newly blind, he's hearing impaired, he's been disabled for less than 3 years, and like Jim and many other people, you know, in ACB know, this is a viable forum, ACB is, for people who are blind to bring their interests, their concerns, and Kevin has brought something into the avenue of accessibility and wayfinding that I believe works. And excited as I not usually am, I got really excited about this and told Charlie and rung his horn about 150 times. But it was too late to get a presentation at the national level in front of the general session. So I'd like to introduce Kevin Stockton from Roseburg, Oregon, the CEO, inventor, and developer, and the main man in blind signs.
Good morning. After an introduction like that, now I'm nice and nervous. Thank you. Well, like I said, Rob said, my name is Kevin Stockton, and mother being, or necessity being the mother of invention is how I came about this. I've been blinded. Before I was blinded, I owned and operated a small but very successful construction company. Construction design engineering was my forte. And we've been doing an awful lot of assisted living centers and things of that nature. So building with the accessibilities in mind has been, the cutting edge of being a conscientious contractor for quite a few years. When I was blinded and I went up to Portland, Oregon in the middle of the winter to take my orientation mobility lessons, I found out what's been missing out of this concept, because I've caused some really neat traffic jams, you know. So I appreciate the people hitting each other and avoiding me. Apologize for that. But anyway, I started talking to my orientation mobility instructor. I said, man, that, you know, is it just me or what? He says, no. Blind people have this trouble all the time, getting across the street, especially with all these different ramps and different radiuses and all the different things that are going on with the curbs. We don't know. Seems like chaos to us. He says, even people who have been blind for an awful long time are still having the same problems. Since then, I've had the opportunity to meet with hundreds of other blind people, and I know we do have the same problem. So I started talking to everybody, a bunch of blind people and a bunch of orientation mobility instructors. What's proper, correct orientation mobility training? And we designed a pattern that goes along with that. It tells you, one, orientation. Where do I stand? You're standing on the sidewalk in the center of the crosswalk area. Two, where am I going? They're pointing to the exact side of the other side of the street in the center of the crosswalk area. So even with a little bit of veer, you're going to be within the crosswalk area by the time you hit the other side of the street. It creates a uniformity out of what feels like to chaos. We don't care what the curb ramps are doing or what anything else is doing, as long as we know where we stand and where we're going. Good idea. Too simple. And it's very, very inexpensive, too. When I came from the private industry, symmetry, durability, and cost effectiveness are the things that drive the public industry. So cost effectiveness was one of the things that we wanted to address initially. It costs less than painting the crosswalks. It's aesthetically pleasing. We want to remember everybody else in this. Architects, everybody else is saying, God, it really looks nice. It's stylized as brickwork. It looks really nice. The problem I had was being in the Portland area, was trying to find a bus stop. You never know if they're nailed to a telephone pole or stapled to a tree or wherever. There's no type of way of knowing. I came into a bad day one day, and I had to get to the store. Like it or not, sometimes you got to do it. I'm living in an apartment in a city I'm completely unfamiliar with. I've been on the bus route one time with my orientation mobility instructor, and I was pretty sure I could get there. But I didn't. not immediately. I ended up standing out in the rain, sleet storm, freezing rain and snow coming down sideways for over an hour, about an hour and a half actually. And I'm thinking, well, trying to get back to where I started from was not an option because I'm not where I thought I am. And I didn't know what to do. I'm standing there waiting for hypothermia to set in, and then I'm going to make a decision. That doesn't sound like a very good idea, but that's about what my options are. I can't think of anybody else going to be out on a day like this where I could simply ask a pedestrian, am I really standing here? But eventually some poor guy came hustling by. I know he needed toilet paper as bad as I did, because otherwise he wouldn't be out on this day. And I reached out with my cane, and I banged on the pole and said, hey, is this a bus stop sign? No, it's a no parking sign. Darn it. He said, the bus stop's another block up. He said, it's mid-block stop. I was hoping he's waving in the direction I was traveling instead of the direction he was traveling. He hustled on down the road. But walking, either way, I've got two choices, left or right. I only have to go one block. I got up there, started fishing around, and I found a bus stop bench. I did. I scored. So that kind of got me going. And I thought, you know, I've made it to the store, and I made it back home. I called a cab. I got it, man. I got my toilet paper. I got a six-pack of beer, and I called a cab. That's enough. I've had enough of it for the day. And I got back to the apartment, and I started thinking about it. And I thought, being a little bit upset and edgy because you get lost and you're out in bad weather and all that kind of stuff. I think everybody knows the drill. Get you upset. But I'm upset farther than that. I understand myself. And I'm angry. I'm angry about something. I helped build and design this environment. And this environment that I helped build and design just reached up and slapped me in the face as a blind person. So I've set my hand to correcting that problem. And if nobody's seen Blind Signs yet, I would really, really like to introduce it to you. It's got a very, very powerful, a bunch of attention up in Oregon and across the nation. Orientation, mobility instructors, blind people, low vision people, people with specific spinal injuries and other disabilities, recognizing it as very useful. We've recently done a minor implementation up in Lane Transit District. It's a wide open transfer area, bus transit area, where there was absolutely no demarcation at all, so obviously blind people never went up there before. And we were going to start a concerted effort to get people out there with mobilities, give it a try, see what you think of it. Well, you know how blind people talk. Yeah, we do. Well, the word spread throughout the blind community, and now all of a sudden blind people are going out to this place where we never went before because we couldn't find where we were going. And Terry Parker, the chair of the Accessibility Advisory Committee, called me up a few days before I came down here, and she was laughing. She said, "Kevin, you're never going to believe it. The blind people are the only ones standing in the right place. They're..." I'm serious. She says they're actually leading the sighted people out from under the kiosk to where the buses are going to stop. Now, isn't that beautiful? Okay, well, thank you very much.
Looks like that concludes our presentation on wayfinding, one of the breakouts from the ACB convention. Don't forget that we are back tonight at 7:30 Central Time, 8:30 Eastern Time, 5:30 Pacific Time. That equates to Friday morning at 0:30 Universal for the first ever internet broadcast live of the Candidates Forum, the debates that will take place between candidates who are standing for the Board of Publications and also debates between candidates standing for the Board of Directors. We'll be here live to cover it. Please join us then, and we're also back with convention coverage at 8 tomorrow morning. Goodbye from Houston for today. Well, for the afternoon.